he could. Freedom. Freedom to Wax wasn't the absence of responsibility. He didn't doubt that if he left again, he'd find himself as a lawman once more. No. Freedom was not lack of responsibilities. It was being able to do what was right without having to worry if it was also wrong. He didn't contemplate leaving, not seriously. But he did sit for a time looking out at that darkness, trying to look past the people, the shadowed suburbs, and see simplicity again. Rusts. What he wouldn't give to trade all the politicians, games, and secrets for an honest murderer calling him out on the street. Coward. His own thought. Not from Harmony or Bleeder. That made it all the more like a punch to the gut, for he knew it to be the truth. Wax took a deep breath and stood up again, shouldering his burdens. He turned away from the darkness and leapt off the bridge, pushing himself into the night again. He'd come here for a moment's solace, to think. Turned out, he didn't like where those thoughts were taking him. 19. As much as Wayne appreciated all the fancy treats the governor was providing, he had to admit he wasn't entirely sympathetic to the man's plight. After all, the whole point of having someone in charge, like the governor, was about making sure people knew which fellow to kill. That was why they had elections, wasn't it? And he'd got to be in charge and order everybody about. But when the assassins got bored, they didn't go whack the guy what sold fish on the street corner. They went for the guy in charge. You had to take the good with the bad, you did. On one hand, you got fancy sweets any time of day. On the other hand, you might find murderers in your loo. That was the breaks. And this innate guy, he seemed to really want to meet Iron Eyes. Not running away to the country when you knew a psychopathic, shape-shifting super-alamancer was after you? Yeah, he understood he was a target. As Wayne sauntered after him, taking the tray from the serving girl as she tried to retreat with the uneaten cakes, the governor stopped in the doorway to his study. "I need a few minutes to think, to prepare my remarks," he said to Wayne and the other guards. "Thank you."
"But sir," Milan said, "you can't go in alone. We need to protect you."
"And what are any of you going to do," Innate said, "about someone who can move at the speed of a thunderclap? We'll just have to take our chances that the constables can deal with this creature."
"I don't think—"
Milan began, but cut off as he shut the door, leaving her, Wayne, and a couple of other guards in the hallway. Wayne rolled his eyes, then leaned against the wall. "You two," he said to the other guards, "go watch the window from outside that room, why don't you? We'll sit up here." The two fellows shuffled, looked like they'd object, but then slunk out of the hallway. "I wonder," Wayne thought, settling down on the floor beside the door, "if they're rethinking their career choices. What with most everyone else guarding the governor dead already."
"You mortals," Milan said, waving toward the door, "can be surprisingly cavalier with your limited lifespans."
"Yeah," Wayne said. "He probably just wants to get me in trouble."
"What?" Milan sounded amused. "By getting himself killed?"
"Sure," Wayne said. "The idiot forbade me from going to his fancy party earlier, then ditched me afterwise. He's got it in for me. He's gonna get himself killed and leave me to explain it to Wax. Sorry, mate, I'll let your pet politician get ripped in half, and Wax'll scowl at me real good even though it's not my fault." Milan sat down across from him and grinned.
"Is that what happened to his horse?"
"Why you gotta bring up that again?" Wayne asked, wriggling down to get comfortable and tipping his hat over his eyes. "That really wasn't my fault. I had myself a debilitating injury when that happened." "Yeah," Wayne said. "Made me cuss and drink like a bugger." He settled back, listening, eyes closed. Servants moved through the building. Messengers went over their routes. Important types discussed their opinions just a room over. They all talked. Everyone had to talk. People couldn't just think something, they had to explain it. Wayne was the same. He was people, after all. This murderer, this Condra, she was people too. She had talked to Wax. She had to talk.
Wax would probably catch her. He did things like that. Impossible things that nobody thought he could. But just in case he didn't, Wayne listened. You could tell a lot about people from the way they talked. You saw their past, their upbringing, their aspirations, all in the words they used. And this Chandra, sooner or later she'd slip up and use the wrong word. A word that would be obvious, like a fellow drinking milk in the middle of a rowdy tavern. He didn't hear anything right off, though oddly he did notice Milan whispering to herself. As he listened, she modulated her voice, making it deeper, though still feminine. She repeated a few words to herself.
She would have been a toofy, Wayne noted, eyes still closed.
Hmm, Milan said.
Your bones, Wayne said. Woman you're wearing right now. Toofy. Second octant. Raised on the outskirts.
And how do you know that?
Milan asked.
Heard her curse as I was helping her, Wayne said, feeling a stab of regret.
The woman had just been doing her job, trying to keep someone from being killed. She's still doing her job, though, he thought, cracking an eye and looking at Milan. Her bones are, at least. Given the choice, if he died while trying to do something important, he'd rather that his bones get up and see it done right. Hell, with some Chandra friends, he could be annoying Steris well into the afterlife.
Like this, Milan said. Second octant, touch of a agave farmer.
Nice, Wayne said. Draw out the end of your sentences. Pitch them lower. Get some real toofy into that voice.
Is this better?
Yeah, actually, Wayne said, sitting up. That's damn good.
Tensun would be proud, Milan said. I can still get a difficult accent right when I need to.
Difficult, Wayne said. The toofy accent?
With a agave farmer.
Common mix, Wayne said. Once I had to do a guy who grew up on the northwestern coast, raised by deaf parents, only talking once in a while, who had then moved in with the terrorist fundamentalists up in the mountains there.
Milan frowned as a servant bustled past carrying linen. Some of the executive staff were going to be staying through the night, what was left of it, and guest rooms needed to be prepared.
I don't know if I can do that, Milan said, talking in a slow, deliberate way, with a hint of terrace and a lot of slurred words. But it does sound like fun.
Ha!
Wayne said, turning on the accent, which was actually more clipped than Milan had made it.
Good. But you're trying too hard. Being raised by parents who can't hear doesn't make a chap stupid. He just looks at the world differently, see? Not bad, Milan said.
The next servant who passed them gave them a glare as she had to pick her way over their outstretched legs in the hallway.
It's better if I have a hat, Wayne said.
A hat?
Sure, Wayne said. Hats is a disguise for your brain. Helps you think like the person what wore it last. You want to know a guy? Put on his hat.
Has anyone ever told you that you're surprisingly wise? Milan asked.
All the bloody time.
They're idiots. You're not wise. You're playing them. You're doing this on purpose.
She grinned.
Oh, I love it.
Wayne tipped his hat forward, smiling and leaning back again.
I'm not lying about the hats, though. They do help.
Sure, Milan said. Like bones.
He cracked an eye at her.
Does it ever bother you? Knowing you might live forever.
Bother me? Why would it? Immortality is damn convenient.
Don't know about that, Wayne said. Seems to me that it would be nice to finally be done, you know? It's like you're running a race, and you don't quite know where the end is, but you got an idea. And you only need to make it that far. I can do that, I figure. But you don't have no end.
You actually sound like you want to die.
Someday, Wayne said. Huh. Maybe I should get into politics.
Milan shook her head at him, seeming bemused.
It can be daunting, she admitted
a short time later,
to consider eternity, as Harmony must see it. but any time I get bored, I can just live a new life.
Put on a new hat, Wayne said. Become someone else.
Switch it up. Be bold where once I was timid. Be crass where I was respectful. Makes life interesting. Dynamic.
She paused.
And there's something else. We can die if we want.
What? Just like that?
Kinda, Milan said. Don't know if you've read the accounts. They're blurry about this topic anyway. But near the end of the world of Ash, Ruin tried to take over the Chandra. Control them directly. Well, Tensun and those in charge, they were really terrified by that. So they planned, and we all talked. And about a century after the Katasandra, we figured out a way to stop our lives. Takes a little concentration, but sets the body into a spiral where we just end.
Nice, Wayne said, nodding. That makes a lot of sense. Always have an escape route planned. Oh, and your A's are still off. You carried them over from your own accent. They aren't nasal enough. Draw them out if you want to sound like a real toofy.
She cocked her head at him.
You're wasted as a human.
Nah, Wayne said. Oh, I barely had a few mouthfuls today.
He reached in his pocket and checked his flask.
Well, maybe a wee more than that.
No, I meant...
He grinned at her and she cut off, then grinned back. He tipped his hat to her, then closed his eyes and continued listening. A short time later, she stood up and started pacing the hall, and he could hear her saying her A sounds to herself as she walked. He listened for a good long while, catching nothing abnormal, though he was pretty sure the sanitation minister guy was lying about his education. That fellow had never been to the university, or if he had, he hadn't hung around long enough to pick up the proper words. Wayne was mulling this over when he heard something out front. A voice, faint, but unmistakable. He scrambled to his feet, causing Milan to jump.
Gotta go, he said. Watch the idiot.
But...
clutching his hat and running down the hallway, his long Ruffs-style duster flaring to the sides. He raced around the corner and dashed toward the front of the mansion.
He said to deliver it here,
the woman was saying to the butler, so I've brought it. It was a simple task. He just needed something made.
Hardly worth waking me.
She turned to him. A radiant, glorious woman, built like a good Ruffs fence. Just tall enough, lean, but strong, too. She had dark hair, which he'd compared to a pony's on several occasions, and it was right unfair that she should get mad, considering she kept it in a tail and everything. She wore trousers, because skirts were stupid, and boots, because stuff needed to be kicked. The whole world could be going wrong, but seeing her made him forget. He grinned. In return, she gave him her special scowl, the one just for him. It was how he knew she cared. That, and when she shot him, she tended to aim for places that didn't hurt too much.
"She's with me," Wayne said, running up.
"Like hell I am,"
Renette said, but she let him steer her away from the butler.
"And one wonders," the butler said from behind, "how His Grace's life can be threatened when we're letting every dust rat in the city saunter up and—"
He cut off, as Renette spun, her pistol out. Wayne caught her arm in time to stop her from firing.
"Dust rat?" she muttered.
"When's the last time you bathed?" Wayne said,
then winced.
"Just, you know, curious."
"Guns don't care if I stink, Wayne. I have things to do. And I don't like being ordered around."
She shook a little cloth pouch in her left hand. Behind, the butler had grown very pale. Wayne got her into the sitting room. She didn't stink, despite what she said. She smelled of grease and gunpowder. Good scents. Renette scents.
"What is it?"
Wayne asked, snatching the pouch once they were out of sight.
"Something Wax asked me to make," Renette said. "Who got killed over there?"
She pointed toward the still-open secret door down to the safe room. Murder always caught her attention, if only because she'd want to see the bodies and judge how well the bullets tore up the flesh. Wayne rolled a small metal object from the pouch onto his palm. A bullet. His hand started to shake. Oh, for harmony's sake, Renette said, plucking the bullet from his hand before he could drop it. It's not a gun, you idiot.
It's part of one,
Wayne said, shoving his hand in his pocket and breathing deeply. He could hold a bullet. He did that all the time for Wax. The shaking subsided. Something seemed odd about that bullet, though. So if I gave you a splinter of wood and told you it had once been in a rifle stock, you'd go to pieces then, too?
Dunno, Wayne said. You think I understand how my brain works?
I'd say there's a logical fallacy in that statement, Renette said. Maybe two. She tucked the bullet back into the pouch. Wax here?
No. He's off detectiving.
Then you'll have to take this, she said, handing him the pouch. His note insisted it was important. Half powder, as he asked, piercing bullet, forged not to shatter. He could hold the bullet. He took it, then tucked it away immediately in his duster. See?
Want to go get a drink? He said. You know, when the city is safe. Or maybe before it's safe. I don't mind none if the pub's a little on fire while we drink.
You know I'd sooner shoot myself, Wayne, she said with a sigh. And Mizra would shoot me if, by chance, I did go, come to think of it.
Wayne frowned. That was nowhere near the vitriol he normally got from her.
What's wrong?
He asked. She shook her head, glancing back toward the entryway.
It's bad out there, Wayne. People still on the streets, thronging together, shouting. I've seen crowds like this before, in the roughs. Usually right before a man got strung up, law or no law. Those were towns of 500. What happens when it's 5 million who start acting like that?
Probably the return of the Ashen World, Wayne said. What better time to finally profess your long-requited love for a certain handsome fellow what don't mind none if you smell like the inside of a barrel of sulfur?
She gave him the glare again. He grinned. But then she didn't shoot him. Or even punch him.
Damn. This was bad.
They're starting to gather outside, Renette said, distracted. Chanting slogans about the governor.
I need to check that, Wayne decided.
If the governor wasn't going to let him in and watch him close up, maybe he could learn something about Bleeder's plans out in that crowd.
Get back to your house, lock the doors, and keep your guns handy.
It was telling that she didn't offer the slightest objection to his order as he strode toward the door, out into the mists. Captain Aradel regarded the governor's writ as he would the last will and testament of a beloved family member, with both reverence and obvious discomfort.
"He names me Lord High Constable," Aradel said. "But, Rosts, I'm no lord."
He looked up at Reddy and his other lieutenants.
"Perhaps," Reddy said. "The appointment conveys a title, sir."
"The governor can't just appoint someone to the peerage," Maracy said. "A new title has to be ratified by a council with a quorum of the major house seats in the city."
She bit her lip as soon as she said it. She didn't mean to be contrary. Aradel didn't appear to mind. He carefully folded the writ and slid it into his jacket pocket. She'd found him gathering a sizable force outside of headquarters, preparing to still malcontents and ring constabulary bells to let the people living nearby know that at least someone was patrolling this night. Phantom sounds floated through the mists. Distant shouts, clangs, screams. It felt like hell itself surrounded them, shrouded in the veil of darkness and fog.
"Sir," Maracy said, "the governor said that he wanted you to do two things. First, send a detachment to forcefully quell rioting in the city. Second, bring up a smaller force to guard him as he prepares to address the people near the mansion. You're not to turn protesters away there, but elsewhere in the city, sir, he counseled you to be firm of hand. Very firm."
"Rusting idiots deserve it,"
said Lieutenant Marilyn, a woman with short blonde hair.
"No need for bloodthirst, Lieutenant," Aradel said. "I seem to remember you cussing out the Hastings family with some regularity yourself."
"Doesn't mean I'm setting fire to the city," Marilyn said. "The High Houses being bastards doesn't excuse being bastards ourselves, sir."
"Well, the mansion seems a good enough center from which to operate," Aradel said. "Chip, you and the messengers run to the other constables general and ask them to meet me at the governor's mansion with their officers. We'll coordinate the city lockdown from there. Everyone else, let's double-time it that way. If His Grace wants to talk to the people, I want a nice, thick barrier of police bodies between him and his constituents. Understand?
The group bustled into motion, the bell ringers setting out in front, the messengers scattering, one even taking to the skies. Chip was one of the coin shots. The rest of the constables fell into a march. An uneven one. They weren't soldiers, but no less resolute.
Sir, Marcy said, walking quickly up to Aradel. There's something else I need to tell you, if you can spare a moment.
How important is it? Aradel asked, pausing at the side of the group.
Very.
Reddy cleared his throat behind them.
Perhaps you should discuss it while traveling to the mansion, sir. If the governor really is planning to address the crowds...
Yes, Aradel said. Innate suddenly appointed me Lord High Constable. That immediately worries me about what other kinds of impulsive things he's capable of doing tonight. Let's do this on the move, Combs. Ready? Bring along the rest of the constables as smartly as you can. I'm going to the mansion ahead of you.
Marcy nodded. The things she wanted to discuss would be best said in the privacy of a carriage anyway. Except...
Idiot,
she thought, as Aradel jogged over to a group of horses in constable livery, reins held by a corporal. The carriage she'd been contemplating pulled away, loaded with equipment, most likely. Reddy grinned at her smugly. Marcy sighed. She'd been looking forward to maintaining her decorum tonight.
Ah, well.
She walked over and took a set of reins. Aradel was already in his saddle. He glanced at her, then raised a hand to his head.
Oh, of course. I didn't think...
Marcy swung up into the saddle, awkwardly bunching her skirt up between her legs, and sitting on part of it, revealing a generous expanse of leg.
It occurs to me, sir, Marcy noted, that Lady Constable uniforms could be distinctly more utilitarian.
We'll make a note of it, Lieutenant Combs.
He glanced toward the retreating carriage.
If you wish.
Sir, Marcy said, I believe the city is on fire. Perhaps we can discuss feminine modesty on another occasion?
Of course.
He nodded, and they set off in a clatter of hooves, trailed by two corporals with rifles in the scabbards on their saddles. The four horses quickly outpaced the larger group of constables, and even the carriage, as they rode through the mists. Marcy was glad of the darkness as it hid her furious blush. In compensation, she had gained the memory of Reddy's stunned expression, utterly shocked by what she'd done.
Well, why shouldn't she show her legs?
Historical precedent and simple practicality demanded that women be allowed into all professions. What lord would turn away a thug or a bloodmaker from his guards just because she had breasts? What constable office would pass up the chance to have every tin eye or coin shot they could get? What bank wouldn't jump at the chance to employ a terrace woman with copper mines? The thing was, women constables were also expected to be models of ladylike behavior. A holdover from the old days, reinforced by the speeches of Lady Aurean Ladrian soon after the Catassandra. There was just this blunt expectation that you would strive to remain feminine at the same time as you did your job. A heavy double standard to bear. At times, Marcy didn't mind. She liked dresses and nice hair and solving problems with a careful word instead of a fist to the face. To her, it was perfectly reasonable to be feminine and a constable. But did the men ever have to worry about being properly masculine while doing their jobs?
One social problem at a time, Marcy,
she admonished herself, riding alongside Aradel. Though she was going to buy some rusting trousers, riding this way was cold.
You ride well,
Aradel called to her as they slowed slightly from their initial burst away from the others. He led the way across a canal bridge, cutting across the middle of the third octant to get to the second.
I've had plenty of practice, Marcy said.
That's uncommon in the city these days, Aradel noted. A hobby?
You could say that,
Marcy said, blushing as she remembered her girlish fascination with the roughs, lawmen, and Alamancer Jack stories. When her friends, well, acquaintances, had been given new coats for their birthdays, she'd begged for a rough's duster and hat. Pure foolishness, of course. She'd completely grown out of that.
What is it you wanted to tell me? Aradel called.
Could we slow further for a moment?
He nodded and obliged, to the point where the horses were maintaining a brisk walk. Maracy opened the purse she'd slung over her shoulder and thrust the letters at Aradel. She hadn't consciously realized how eager she'd been to pass them on to someone else, so that the responsibility they represented wouldn't rest solely on her. Aradel took them.
"What's this?"
he asked quietly. "You remember telling me to snoop around the governor's place if I got the chance?"
"I remember telling you, with great circumspection, to keep your eyes open, Lieutenant."
"I did, sir. I kept my hands open, too, in case something damning happened to fall into them."
"Harmony, what did you find?"
"Letters," Maracy said, "from Innate to various ladies and lords in the city, arranging for the purchase of political favors and the suppression of legislation they didn't want. Sir, they're annotated in his own hand, and they match my records of suspicious events during his tenure as governor. During the ride to bring you the writ, I read through them, and I'm convinced he's just as corrupt as his brother was."
Aradel gave no outward reaction of either surprise or outrage. He wrote in silence, gripping the letters, eyes forward.
"Sir?"
Maracy finally asked.
"You put me in a difficult position, Lieutenant."
"Sir, I'd say that the governor has put you in that position, not me."
"How legally did you obtain these?"
"That depends," Maracy said, "on how the courts would interpret your authority to investigate when there is reasonable suspicion of wrongdoing, and whether or not you were justified in authorizing me to act."
"In other words, you stole them?"
"Yes, sir."
Aradel tucked them away.
"It doesn't mean we shouldn't protect him, sir," Maracy offered. "Until proven guilty in court, he's still the rightful leader of the city. This isn't the roughs, where we can just stride up and shoot someone, then publish our reasons later."
"The mere fact that you feel you need to point that out," Aradel said, "means you've been spending too much time with your coin-shot friend, Combs. I'm not considering avoiding my duty. I'm just thinking of all these people and their rioting. And they're right. They are being robbed by the system. Ruin. We were supposed to be better than this. What if the Lord Mistborn saw us now?"
"I suspect," Maracy said, "he'd tell us to do something about the situation."
Aradel nodded curtly. When he offered no further commentary, Maracy kicked her horse back into a trot, and the Lord High Constable followed suit. Tradition held that today's Field of Rebirth looked exactly the same as on that day long ago when humankind had crept from the wombs of stone that Harmony had created. Though the city had claimed all of the surrounding area, this central ring of pleasant grass and gentle hills had been left as a monument to another time. Merwill Flowers brushed Wax's mist coat as he strode across the springy ground. The tradition that this place hadn't changed was pure stupidity. Surely when Breeze and Hammond had climbed out into the sunlight, they hadn't found grass that was perfectly manicured, or flowers that grew in careful lines. Did people who spoke of that tradition just ignore the benches and the pathways? The buildings? Surely Harmony hadn't left lavatories on the grassland for the convenience of visitors. At the center, the highest hill was topped by the half-museum, half-mausoleum, sheltering the tombs of the last emperor and the ascendant warrior. Their giant statues rose above, dominating the area. As Wax approached, he was surprised to find lamps on the low structure spilling light across the grass and flowers. A pair of constables guarded the door.
"Now just turn on back and don't make trouble," one of them called as Wax approached.
Wax ignored the order, striding out of the mists and up to the men.
"The caretaker's called for your help, I assume?"
The two constables studied him, then reluctantly saluted. His reputation preceded him, though these men wore the patches of constables from the first octant. It was a precinct he hadn't often visited, but who else strode through the night in a mist coat with a shotgun strapped to his leg?
"They're worried about looters,"
one of the constables said, a squat fellow with a half-beard around his mouth.
Sir?"
"Wise,"
Wax said, striding past them and pushing into the mausoleum.
Sir?"
one of the constables said.
"They said not to let—" "Sir?"
Wax pushed the door shut as the two constables started arguing outside about whether they should stop him or not. He scanned the open foyer with its murals of the originators.